Yeah. Ramadan Mubarak to everyone. That was the call to prayer, which is heard each evening as the sun sets in the 30 days of Ramadan, the Muslim holiday, which asks people to take the time. It's fasting all day, and take the time to go inside and be close to nature, to one's creator. And in the evening, people come together for iftar, which is a grand meal. And I, just as I had joined the Seder on Zoom last night, I joined iftar on Zoom, and I learned a lot. It was a beautiful program. And you can find out more about Ramadan. One thing that is interesting logistically is that the Islamic calendar, like the Jewish calendar, is lunar, so the days begin in the evening. A big difference is the Jewish calendar balances out with the solar calendar by adding an extra month. The Islamic calendar does not, and so Ramadan takes place at various times during the year. So think about that when you're fasting, whether your day light is 14 hours or 6 hours. All of it is time to meditate. And you can meditate with the arts right here with me. This is Carol on Arts Live and Local. First off, I just want to give a huge thank you to everyone who called in and supported our wonderful community radio station, KMUN. And we were very pleased. And I guess you were too, because you were very responsive. I had two new business memberships on last week's show. Grateful Rain, it was for my guests, Jenny Q and Mishkin. And I'm not sure the correct name, but Andrea Mazzarella's business. Thank you so, so much. And to all of you who pitched in on whatever show, or just for the whole concept of this little town, not even a very big county, having our own voice in possibly the most beautiful part of the world, or one of them. Okay. We still need to send out healing for so many. And today, there are about 100 of us sending love and thoughts to Rosie in Portland. So if you want to add Rosie Goldsmith to your list, please do. And Sue, Z, Earl, the Armstrong family, Eva, Frederica, and Ben Frederica. I think the good energies help, along with good doctors and good care. Well, in the way of care, as you know, one of my favorite ways to take care of each other is through the arts. And my first guest is Annie Eskelin, who is herself an artist, plus an arts administrator. We were so lucky when she moved here. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Carol. Great to be here.
How many years ago was it you moved here?
That's a good question. The number keeps changing. It's five or six.
Something like that. Close enough. Because it feels like you've always been here, because you jumped in started making things happen. And that's why you're here today, because you picked up the reins on the Astoria Open Studios tour And that's going to be happening again in July. But the reason you're here today is that the deadline in the call for artists is May 15th. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, if you know any history too, about the Open Studios tour, who can get involved, how to get involved, what kind of stuff they need, etc.
Sure, absolutely happy to. So this is the 11th annual tour, and my understanding is that it has happened for, you know, well over two decades, but not consistently. So each year it's the last weekend of July, and local artists open their studios to the public, which offers a really wonderful experience that you get to meet the makers in the space where they create their artwork. You get to purchase artwork directly from the creators and talk to them about why, you know, and how, what techniques they use to make their work. It's really wonderful.
So what if somebody doesn't have, doesn't have a home studio, or their studio is too tiny to bring people in? Do they have possibilities there?
Yes, that is a good question. So there are a lot of makers that have spaces that they are comfortable opening to the public, but there are also a lot. Maybe they make work on their, you know, kitchen table or something mm-hmm. along those lines. So each year we offer pop-up studios.
Mm.
We always coordinate that after everybody's signed up to either, when you register, there's these little check boxes, and you can say if you have space for another artist.
Oh, good
or
idea.
Or if you don't have a space and you want us to find one for you, or if you've already partnered up, those kinds of things. Because ideally, we want as many artists to participate as possible.
So, what kinds of art do you invite?
Yeah, so it's open for all artists. Mostly it's fine artists. There aren't very many artisans, but occasionally that is a broad term.
Yeah, I was going to ask, can you define, sorry, put you on the spot. Can you define that? Because a lot of us aren't quite sure where that delineation comes in.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. So we really define it as, it's not necessarily craft, so not necessarily fine craft, more fine artwork. So it's not necessarily needle baskets, although there's every walk under the sun of what you can do with any media. So mm-hmm. We haven't really had too much of an issue with needing to, make set rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned baskets, because we have a wonderful art basket maker across the river. Not here in Astoria, but she shows her work across the river and in one of the art galleries, actually. So, yeah, I was curious what might not make it. For example, ironworks, or, I mean, anything. How do you qualify as art?
Yeah, I mean, even ironworks, you could consider it sculptural.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point. Most open studio events around the region are juried.
Uh-huh.
This one is not.
Ah.
So we really open it up to everybody. There tends to be about 50 artists that participate,
okay.
And that's generally around 25 locations, something along those lines.
Okay. Well, that is an important detail, that it is not juried. But What do you ask for? Descriptions, photographs?
So this year, registration is online only, and you go to AstoriaVisualArts.org. Open Studios is one of our programs. Mm-hmm. And you go to the AOST or Astoria Open Studios page, and then you click register, and then you'll go through a form where, you know, your address, and if you want to be in person or virtual, and I should talk about that in a little bit, because there's a new option this year.
Okay.
And then at the end, you'll upload images, you'll add a bio or an artist statement. You'll list whether or not your space is handicap accessible, which means whether there are stairs or not. Or, you know, artists could be a ladder for, you never really know.
Up in the garret, right.
Yeah, come on up.
Yeah, right. A little safety concerns, but hey, who's that? Okay, tell us, what's the story on the virtual?
Yeah, so last year, Open Studios was virtual, and an interesting thing happened where we realized when we put the event together that there were a lot of artists that we wouldn't normally attract to Open Studios that participated last year. And and especially with COVID still around, most artists who have signed up so far have chosen to be open to the public. So far, only two have decided to be virtual. But it's still, you know, it's collective promotion for all of our regional artists, and even if they're virtual.
So when you say that last year a number of artists came who would not have or had not when it was live in person, what do you think was going on there?
Well, from just talking to them, they were pretty excited about the virtual option because they don't feel comfortable inviting the public into their home, for example. And but they still love the opportunity to be a part of something as an artist, and especially something like Astoria Open Studios Tour. There's a wonderful collective marketing campaign. So we're doing an ad in Oregon Coast Magazine, for example, which they print, you know, 250,000 copies all over the place. And, you know, that's something that an individual artist
wouldn't do themselves. Right, right. Not even close. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because that would not have occurred to me in the past. But I like that it's bringing in even more people. And each artist who comes brings with themselves a group of interested parties who then are opened up to all the other artists. So, the idea of the arts being in competition versus that is not art, by the way. That's a local motorcycle. But did I mention, folks, this is Arts Live and Local from the parking lot? Yeah. So we've said this often about the theaters, that rather than thinking of it as competitive, that we're raising the bar for everybody. Restaurants, too. You know, you bring people in for one thing, and they're suddenly exposed to something, many other things that might appeal to them. So, okay, Annie, you are in charge of Astoria Open Studios Tour, but you're also the director of the Astoria Visual Arts. So for people who are not familiar with this incredible organization that has grown in so many good ways. Can you tell us a little bit about that and some of the other things? You made me think of this when you said if you go to our webpage, you'll see a list. So what do you got going?
Yeah. So I've been involved with Astoria Visual Arts for roughly 5 years, and I started as an artist in residence when I moved to town. Mm-hmm. So I applied for one of AVA, Astoria Visual Arts programs, is an artist in residence program, and through that, it's interesting. So what that is you get a free studio space for a number of months. When I did it, it was only 3 months, but now the studio space is 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing how many doors that opened for me and how many people I met.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job after that
mm-hmm.
because I had local references. I mean, it's just, it's fascinating the sphere of benefits that
mm-hmm.
has as just one of the things. Astoria Visual Arts is an organization that's been around for 30 years. Most of the programming is 6 or 7 years old, so it's relatively new. But it always centers around, or everything centers around promoting artists and strengthening the arts within the region. A lot of the programs are also partnerships with other mm-hmm. Organizations or the school system.
Or the ROAR, no, is it CORE, Coastal Oregon, the...
Coastal Oregon Artist Residency is another one of the programs that is just absolutely amazing. That's a partnership with Western Ecology of Oregon, and it's
phenomenal.
It's such a cool program. So two artists get to have a studio space and access to scavenging privileges at the transfer station, and they get all sorts of items, and then Recology pays them a stipend of $1,000 a month to make artwork for 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
That was canceled last year because of COVID,
mm-hmm.
But we believe it's still pending, but we're hoping it will continue this year.
And folks, in case the term transfer station doesn't ring a bell, that's the dump.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was called when I was a kid.
In the vernacular, that's what it's called. And it is amazing what kind of art comes out of there. So this is AstoriaVisualArts.org. You can find information about so many of the programs, Miss B, the work with the schools, and the Astoria Open Studios Tour. And the deadline is May 15th, and if I'm understanding you correctly, there is no limit, or is there a limit to the number of artists?
Well, it hasn't been an issue. We print a full-color tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, we want people to be able to make it to as many stops as they can, and if it gets too big, artists won't get as many visitors to the studios.
Right.
But so far, that hasn't been an issue.
Good. Okay. And the tour itself is happening at the end of July, the last weekend in July, the 24th and 25th this year. And so if you've been thinking about this for years, get to it. Go to the website. Sign up and join. And it is, as Annie says, it's amazing how much you can personally get out of this, including relationships with other artists and just learning about the art scene in Astoria. If you are not a visual artist or a ceramicist, then Just be sure to stay tuned. Annie's going to be back. This is Annie Eskelin, the director of both of the AVA and the AOST, the studios tour. And she'll be back in July and maybe bring one of the artists with her to talk about what's happening and then get ready to have a terrific weekend touring all over. And some of these places are just around the corner from each other. So you can park a car and just walk. And that's a lot of fun. Some of them are farther away, and they're worth going to also. Hey, Annie, thank you so much, and thanks for continuing on. What's up at the AVA right now, at the gallery?
Right now in the gallery, which is located at 1000, it's Duane Street, 10th and Duane, we have a community show for Earth Day.
Uh-huh.
So there's 25 local artists' artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Up, and the end of next week, we're going to do a public kind of a meet and greet virtually with the artists.
Okay.
And you can learn more about that online soon. I also want to mention a couple things more about the tour.
Yes, please.
That artists may find interesting. So there is a little registration fee. It's $40.
Okay, we don't give prices, so don't. Yeah,
okay. Well, there's a little registration fee, right. But artists retain 100% of their sales.
Ooh, wow.
That's fantastic. And also, this is sponsored by the City of Astoria Promote Tourism Fund.
Nice. I don't think I know too many art shows where the artist retains 100% of the profits or of the income. So, and the AVA and the studios tour, working with the city, does all the promotion. Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So check out AstoriaVisualArts.org. The deadline to sign up is May 15th. The event itself is July 24th and 25th.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in on the phone line, and we'll be seeing you.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much, Carol.
Bye-bye. Folks, you are listening to Arts Live and Local from the parking lot, and Annie mentioned Earth Day, and as we know, those of us lucky enough to live here or in another beautiful part of the world, Earth Day is every day, but it's great that the whole world gets on it and celebrates. Yeah, 50 years ago, I remember coming back from Nova Scotia where I was working. I got back as fast as I could in time to be part of Earth Day. And my friend in Squamish, yep, that very same Carol in Squamish, you can ask her about it, too. Susan, too. So let's have a listen to some Earth Day celebratory music with thanks to Jack. This land was made for you and me and every living thing. And that song, bringing you that song, is a perfect example of KMUN, Community Radio. I heard it yesterday on Jack's show. Loved it. Wrote to Jack. Got the name. Sent it to Nevada. He found it and put it on the air for you. So we are so blessed here. We have a terrific staff here at KMUN who keeps us going through these challenging times, and a fabulous volunteer organization that I enjoy every day. And I'm glad you do, too. Thanks again for your support. KMUN.org. By the way, you can donate any time to KMUN. You don't have to wait for a pledge drive. But when we have pledge drives, we ask you to bring us to our goal. Well, speaking of goals, my next guest, Julia Gingrich, came here with a goal. It's a goal she's had all her life, and it has to do with dance. And I am so pleased. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Carol.
Julia, you've been, I think you hit the ground running although you slowly came to my awareness. And once I realized you were for real and sticking around, I was just thrilled to have such a solid dance group staying. Sparrow Dance Company. I don't even know how many productions you've done. This one is in cooperation with KMUN. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So people will be able to, or starting today, people will be able to see it on KMUN YouTube. Just go to KMUN.org and you can find it. So I'm going to bring on the second guest, and that is Colin Smith. Is it Colin or Colin?
It's Colin.
Okay. You never know. I like the check. Hey, if you were in person, I would have asked you before, but since we're in this new mode, Colin Smith is the videographer who filmed this particular production and edited it. And I'm first going to ask Julia to tell us about Creek, a dance film. But Colin, feel free to jump in. And Julia, feel free to direct questions or comments to Colin. This can be a three-way conversation since you two know everything and I don't. So Julia, tell us.
Sure. Yeah, so Graham invited Sparrow to bring a piece for the virtual YouTube world. And I just kind of cornered him and said, well, what do you want from us? Because we can do a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something really artistic, kind of out of the box. And so we've been providing a lot of kind of joy and celebratious things during COVID to try to combat the gloomy mood. And so we said, well, let's get serious and kind of break some rules and show the area a different side of what we can do. So I chose a piece of music by Bon Iver, which is really kind of raw and static and kind of sends that chill up your spine. And so that really inspired me to create a piece which dives into exploring how your subconscious can affect you, whether you know it or not, and your decision-making and how it can control you at times.
Mm-hmm. So that is telling me that you did the choreography.
Yeah, I did the choreography and
but you're not dancing. Or are you?
Yeah, I'm dancing in it.
Okay.
So there's a main soloist, and that is the lovely Sarah Cohen.
Right.
And then there's two dancers who I call shadow spirits.
Ah.
Who are essentially playing the role of the subconscious. I'm one of those spirits.
And the second spirit is?
Sarah Elder.
Okay. So it's the Sparrow Dance Company trio. That's, okay. So, is your phone standing still? We're getting a little static here. Colin, you were called, you were called in to film this. How does that work for you? Do you make the decisions on whether it's a close up or far back, or do you work together with Julia and the Sarahs, or tell us?
Well, we did end up working together on that. But we kind of initially set it up. It was me and Graham and Tyler Little, and we all filmed it, and we kind of approached it in the way of kind of like being a music video. And funny enough, when Julia and I got together to edit it, the close-up shots that we got, we didn't really end up needing to use because the approach was more of like a theatrical one rather than like, you know, like fast cut, like lots of covered music video. It's actually like a very fine and free flowing, a lot more wide shot. Mm-hmm. So it's presented much more in like in a theatrical sense than it is in a video sense. Even though it is a video, it feels more like an experience. Like you're in a theater watching it, you know?
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Julia, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I'm hearing sounds. Yeah. So did you have the concept from the beginning? Or was it when you saw the footage that it sort of came together? I'm just wondering about the whole genesis of this piece.
Sure. No, I had a clear vision. And so I always feel like the bad guy when I get together with the videographer, because I feel like I rip it apart. Because I go in and I was like, no, that's too fast, too much, because essentially the way I can explain it is as a viewer, we're telling a story. And so the viewer's eye, like Colin said, it has to be able to catch up to the movement of the dancer. So it is theatrical in the sense that it's more free-flowing and smooth, because if the cuts are so fast and dramatic like it would be with, say, a band or a music video, you lose the story. That's not always the case, but a lot of the time, that's how I like to approach it, is much more slow-paced, and so every cut has a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Colin, did you... I'm sorry to hit you with this, but do you feel you learned more about dance or about Julia's brain? Or, when you're doing that kind of a collaboration, I wonder how...
Yeah, I think it's kind of almost like a reoccurring lesson in different capacities every time, but it always seems like less always becomes more. Like don't try to, you know what I mean? Like you can really overdo it, whether it's in, you know, cutting or or different shot compositions or any, you know, anything like that. And I guess such is life.
Well, you know? Yeah, that less is more. We've been saying that for a long time. And that brings us around to Earth Day again, too, doesn't it? Because, yeah, if we were a little bit less, we'd have more of life. So this is Creek, a dance film. What does the creek have to do with anything, Julia? Or does that have a meaning?
Yeah, good question. It's kind of the abstract title of Bon Iver's music for that piece. He has a lot of kind of abstract titles. And it's also incorporated into the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
This vision of a creek moving and
healing
the creek. And so the choreography kind of involves the idea of a creek and... feeling it and dunking in it and so forth.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, we hadn't talked before, so now I'm hearing that you already had two large elements, the music, the lyrics and the melody, three, and the dance. So that would, again... when we talk about less is more, throwing in a lot of interesting cuts might work if you're going to watch this 20 times and you see each time you see something new, but it might also detract because there's already so much going on. And it sounds like it's almost a psychological thriller.
Yeah, you know, I purposely... chose not to kind of explain the storyline behind the piece.
Okay.
And just let the viewer take their interpretation of how a subconscious, you know, affects someone. Because I just thought it was such an interesting topic to explore. And I want to hit that less is more, even in the sense of the choreographer. I'm always telling my dancers that, you know, there's too much going on and we miss this intimate moment. Mm-hmm. So let's just slow it down.
Nice. Yeah. 100%. How long is the piece?
It's only about 2 minutes long.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. You know, when I...
You have to watch it twice, Carol.
Oh, no. At least. Are you kidding? When I first saw your rich, luscious piece that you filmed at the Astoria Arts and Movement Center, it stopped at 5 minutes, and I thought, oh, no, there goes my computer again. So I turned it on again, and I learned that the whole thing was only 5 minutes, so I had to keep watching it because it was so delicious. So I'm glad I asked, so I won't be too shocked. Folks, this tells you that you can't, no excuse for not checking it out, because it's 2 minutes. And if you love it, which I suspect we all will, because so far I have been very excited about all the work you've done. And Julia with the Sparrow Dance Company. So again, this is on KMUN YouTube channel, and there's lots more there. So while you're there, you can look up many of the musicians and things going on in our area. And that's it for this one. There's no live performance, but stay tuned to Sparrow Dance Company, because they pop up all over the place. And I read your mission to enrich our community through cultural dance, performance, and education while supporting charitable groups. Dance across boundaries of age, culture, and ideologies. So thank you so much for bringing that to us and keeping it going. Thanks to this Sarah. I shouldn't do that. I said the Sarahs, Sarah Cohn, and what is the other Sarah's last
name? Sarah Elder.
Elder. Sarah Elder and Sarah Cohn. And thank you, Colin Smith. You've done quite a bit of filming in our area, haven't you?
Yes, I have over the years.
Could you throw out a few names that people might recognize?
Oh, geez. Well, I think... probably the most known one would have been the Fort George Whistle video that played before the movie at the Columbian. It may have been a while since that was there, but it was on for for a year or two, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Did, one for the Daylight Savings Time, which was with my very good friend Marco, and with the drag performance, with Dragolution. We did a short film.
Right, Daylight Comes. I don't know about Savings Time, but yeah. Okay.
Oh, that was the name of the short film.
Was it Daylight Savings Time? I love it. That's great. Okay. Well, thank you, and carry on, and stay. Keep me posted on what's next. Okay, Julia?
Will do. Thank you, Carol.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks to you both. And this is KMUN Arts, live and local from the parking lot. And we have an exchange going on right here in the parking lot. It's a very exciting place. We have equipment comes, equipment goes, flattened boxes take off. The city is alive. The trees are all in blossom. It's a good time to be alive. And that's why we're here, all of us. And my next guest as well. But first, let's hear a little bit more music for the Earth. I was lucky enough to, this Zoom business, Zooms and webinars and all that kind of stuff without any mileage. It's a very rich, rich world. So as I mentioned, I got to see a celebration of Earth Day. And Willie Nelson with his son Micah Nelson were was playing that song. So with the magic of Nevada here in this, at this station, I was able to pull it up to share with you. And some more magic that we have in this town is all the wonderful organizations that support all of us, all of our community members. And one of those is The Harbor. And hopefully you all know about it. But just in case you don't, and just in case you don't know what's happening right now and how lucky you can get, I've got Jordan Okanowski here, who is in charge of the Harbor Soup Bowl Project. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Carol. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And if you were listening to the conversation on Wednesday morning, you might have caught Graham talking to Jordan as well. But I wanted to bring him on because I like to celebrate this particular fundraiser every year. It pulls together one of the glorious parts of our local arts, and that would be Richard Roland's Anagama Kiln and all of the potters and bowl makers that he has here in the community. Over the years, it has grown tremendously. At the beginning, there were just two of them. Ben and Richard made all the bowls. But now, you've got a mass of people, don't you, Jordan?
Yeah, we sure do. He's got a whole team of it. I've got the names here. Would you mind if I just read off some of the names of the people who helped make this possible this year?
Yeah, so folks, let's just let folks know. If you buy a ticket for the Soup Bowl, and Jordan's going to tell you how and why and all that stuff, and you will get a bowl by one of these artists, and as many of us have every year, and the money all goes, this is all donated, the money all goes to the Harbor, which is, what's the definition of the Harbor, by the way?
Yeah, so we are the only organization in Clatsop County that's solely dedicated to helping survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, stalking, and human trafficking. So that's what we do, and we do it all free of cost to anyone who needs our services.
Okay, so that's what you will be supporting when you take part in the Soup Bowl Project. Personally, I can guarantee that every one of the bowls is gorgeous. Maybe I'll tell you why I know, maybe I won't. But Jordan's going to tell you who made these bowls. I'm curious, too. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so Richard's got a whole team of volunteers out there working with him. So we've got Eddie Gore, Mary Young, Anna Rodriguez, Colin Meston, David Campiche, Howard Clark, Nancy Walsh, Nathan Paddock, Brand Dichter, Lauren Cross, Jimmy Mendez, Ben Thompson, Randy McClelland, and, of course, Richard Rowan himself. So it's a whole team making these. This year they got us 135, I believe, in just record time, too. It was incredible.
Fantastic.
So, my hat's off to this incredible team of volunteers helping us out. It's so great.
Well, you know, a lot of those names are familiar from past years. I recognize them, including, of course, David Campiche, who's one of our board members here at KMUN, and Rand Deister, who's been doing it forever. Ben Thompson's the one who worked with Richard. He was a student at the time, the very first Soup Bowl. And, of course, Randy McClelland, who's been on the air with me to talk about it, and Lauren Cross, Nancy Walsh. But there were a whole bunch of names there I've never heard. And that's exciting that new people are joining in. So are these bowls, do you know, were all of them made on the Anagama wood fire kiln, or were some of them made in the gas fire kiln, or electric kiln?
I believe, so we have both the wood-fired ones, and we have some stoneware ones that I believe were made in either the electric or the gas kiln. Mm-hmm. And they're all just stunningly beautiful. We got a little bit of, you know, something for everyone. And that's part of the fun. Carol, I don't know if I want to ruin the surprise, but Carol picked up her bull from us earlier today, and it's just one of my favorite things is just watching someone select their bull. Because everyone, I was using the phrase bull mate earlier today, but everyone has their own particular thing they're looking for. It's just, it's great to see everyone find the bull that's perfect for them. I love it.
Well, for full disclosure, since you already disclosed, I did ask for that privilege, and we thought it would be good so that I could honestly rave about not just bowls in general, but this year's bowls as well. And I limited myself to the Anagama bowls because I'm kind of partial, as I told Jordan. I got a whole education in what it's all about, what bowl making is about, the function, the aesthetics, and the process. The first year with Richard, I had no idea. I was just looking for a pretty thing and basically to support an organization that I had worked with and for years. And then I started to learn about this functional art and the idea of, as Richard always has told us, these are for using because it's part of the whole process. And again, this is timing is fantastic for Earth Day. Take that clay and form something that one person digs the clay, perhaps. Somebody else is forming the bowl. Others created the kiln. And now whoever takes that bowl home gets to experience it with delicious whatever you want to put in it. Now, Jordan, tell folks what they're going to get to put in it.
Yeah, so this year for the event, since we couldn't have a big gala in person, of course, we still wanted to bring people the soup they remembered from years past. And so this year we got a team of local restaurants to agree to a system where everyone who buys a ticket to the Soup Bowl will get a pack of 5 soupons, and each of those will be good for a free soup from local businesses if they spend $20 at the local restaurant. And that way, we just want to generate a little bit of business for these people who have made this so memorable for us in the past, all these restaurants who have always come through for us. We figured we just want to help them out a little bit, so we put in the little incentive there, spend $20 and get a free soup from these local restaurants, just to generate a little bit of business after what has to have been the most challenging year in recent history.
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing about this particular event. When it started, the soups were all made by volunteers. And I have my favorite, and Howard knows which one it is, but I'm not mentioning it. And it was wonderful. And as it grew larger and larger, a lot of the local establishments got involved and have stayed involved. And it's another glorious community event. So you get to support an organization that supports this community and experience the art. Now, I don't know if Richard's giving classes these days. Is that happening?
I think he still is, except for the college kind of shutting down for a little bit, just while there are high case rates in the area. But I think he's still planning to do it for a little bit longer, as he's saying.
Well, if you have the opportunity, I did take the class, and again, I developed a very healthy respect for what goes into making these bowls. It's a huge amount of time, and so all of the volunteer bowl makers, we give a great big thank you to all of them, and to all of you who are supporting the community and the arts right here. Thank you so much, Jordan. What's the title of your job at the Harbor?
So I have a split job. I'm both the event coordinator and also when I'm not organizing the Soup Bowl, I'm a survivor advocate. So I'm one of the people answering the phones and helping people and just being there with everybody.
Okay, tell us, what is the number at the Harbor for people in crisis?
That's a great question. So during our office hours, Our phone numbers are 503-325-3426. That's from 9 to 5. But then we have a crisis line that's on 24/7. So there's always someone answering the phone if anyone's in crisis. And that phone number is 503-325-5735. I'll say that one more time.
Yes.
325-5735.
Thank you so much. Where do people get their tickets?
People can get their tickets on our website, and that's HarborNW, like Northwest, harbornw.org.
It's as simple as that, folks. Get on it, though, because as Jordan said, there were 135. A lot of those, most of the tickets are gone. There are still tickets. Do it now. Harbor, that's the American spelling, H-A-R-B-O-R, Northwest, N-W, harbornw.org. Thank you so much, Jordan. And I'm so glad you're working there. What a wonderful combination. Okay. And folks, the Soup Bowl gathering is May 1st. So once you get your bowls and do all that, and pickup is tomorrow or later, but then you'll be able to do an event online, and you can get all this information at harbornw.org. Okay, Arts Live and Local is ready to go offline. This is KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB 89.5, Coast, KMUN.org. Remember, KMUN, Community, KMUN.org. I've got one last piece of music to go for Earth Day. This was another one from the celebration that I watched, Ziggy Marley. And I wish you all a good Earth Day every day, safety, health, and joy. Thanks for being here with me, Carol.